Welcome to the Left to Right, the Great Divide podcast show. I'm your host, John Duffy, and today is the first show. Today is, like I said, the first show. I previously produced over 90 Live Courageously podcast shows, and I'll continue with those shows as I take on this new show with the goal of exploring the great political divide in our country as it has deepened and become harder to communicate across the divide. I bring my unique experience having traveled across the divide, starting out as a JFK Democrat, becoming an American Maoist communist leader, to becoming an independent, then voting Republican, and becoming an American first conservative. It's a long story and a long journey, and I'll share it in more depth in the future. A little backstory, I was interviewed in the 80s by the great oral historian Studs Terkel in Chicago in his book, The Great Divide, A Second Look at the American Dream. At that time, I was on the left politically, so I go from there to here, taking another look at the Great Divide from the right side politically. And today's show is with a friend, Siaka Masukwai, and who has become a Hollywood actor, for over 15 years, and his renowned works include Lethal Weapon, SWAT, and When Kids Grow Up. He's also a founding figure of the comedy show What the Fact? It's Just Comedy. I like that title. Canceled from Hollywood because of his beliefs during the COVID lockdown in 2020, Siaka saw all the chaos and lies being told by the mainstream media and started speaking out. He got involved by attending Trump rallies in Beverly Hills and supporting the California recall of Governor Gavin Newsom. Thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request by Judicial Watch, Siaka found out that he was on a secret list by the Secretary of State to censor him on social media. Like many Americans in 21, Siaka was raided by the FBI for simply being in D.C. on January 6th, and up to now, his belongings have not yet been returned. It was this incredible violation of his rights and privacy, in addition to a very clear call from God that convinced him to run for local office, recognizing that today is the day of the dutiful citizen once again. And Siaka officially put his name in the hat for California State Assembly, District 43, just in the nick of time. And he ran a great campaign, but unsurprisingly lost to his leftist competitor. Siaka has been beating the pavement ever since with features on PragerU, Fox News, OAN, American Faith Network, Newsmax, the Babylon Bee podcast, and countless other credible media sources. He currently aims to create society enriching content that America is starving for through his work as a writer, actor, and producer. He's also a founding member of Hollywood for Freedom, an organization committed to creating a new Hollywood. Siaka stands for faith, family, and freedom. And with all that, let me welcome Siaka to the stage, man. Hey, brother. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, John, how you doing, buddy? Thank you for having me on. This is great. Absolutely. This is your first episode.
You're my first guest on the first episode, The Great Divide. I was like, I can't think of a better person to have on, man.
Well, hey, it can only go up from here. That's the best thing we can hope for, right?
You know, I always start out with the best, you know?
There you go.
That's the way I look at it. You know, let's go strong, man. I appreciate it, brother.
I appreciate it.
So, you know, one of the things I like to always do, and most of the people I've had on my other show as well as this are people I know personally, or I've had the, you know, honor of meeting personally. So how did we meet, if you remember? What's our connection? Yeah. How did we connect?
Well, we were actually just talking about this amazing human being, Zena, and she lived in my neighborhood. Actually, I met Zena while doing door knocking for my campaign back in 22. So I meet Zena. Then we're over at America Fest last year in 2024. And it's like, you know, hey, let's all get together. And Zena was like, you have to meet this amazing guy, John Duffy, does great work in like the Christian world and films and all that, producer. He's like, let's meet. So we met up. We hit it off right away. You're like, wow, I didn't know you were gonna just. We're chatting, we're hanging out, we're getting to know each other. And it was cool. It was one of those things. And then we actually had, when we both respectively, because at this point I had moved to Tennessee. When we both got back to each other's states here in California, I'm in Tennessee, then we had like hours conversations to get to know each other even more. And this is to a certain extent a long time coming that we get a chance to sit down and really chop it up for the masses here. So I'm excited to get that going. And one day I look forward to actually being on set with you on one of your projects, you know?
Oh, I that would be great, man. I know you have a bunch of projects too that you sent me, and hopefully we can find something to work on. But yeah. I think you may remember, but you know, besides being introduced by Zena officially in TPUSA in Phoenix, we met briefly for about a moment at a screening of a movie, Nefarious, up at Pastor Rob McCoy's church.
Yes, yes.
And that was a very cool night. And you had a lot of people. I went up, introduced myself to you, but I know in those kind of moments it was like, yeah, hey, and then I moved on. But then we had we ended up in Arizona and really officially which was cool.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of the examples, the point that you read it on my bio, is trying to, create or be a part of projects that help to bring just enriching stories to our culture. Nefarious is a Steve Dace movie out of the Blaze. It's it is a Christian movie. It's a movie, or I would say a movie done by Christians, where the message and the scriptural accuracy is within that was just so beautiful, but at the same time it didn't come off like that Hallmark, everything, all the filters are done extra so everything looks super white and bright, and it's actually really kind of meat and potatoes, which I find in the Bible itself. So I really love that night, and I think that movie excited a lot of us for how Christian-led films can look and can feel and connect with people at a deep emotional level. So shout out to Rob McCoy, shout out to Godspeak Church in Thousand Oaks for hosting that show, hosting that screening over there. And that was a Hollywood for Freedom presented event too. So
exactly, which was the first time I was introduced. And we'll get into Hollywood for Freedom and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. But that was my first introduction to that group, Hollywood for Freedom. And, one of my friends played the warden in that film, a military veteran, Tom Omer. He played the military vet. And the lead actor was somebody that I worked with in a movie previously. And I just thought it was a great movie. And I know they're going to make a TV series now. Yes. They're working on with Cary Solomon, who was the producer of it. So yeah, it was a very cool movie. Great night. Great meeting you. And then, as life has it, as God has it, we reconnected in a more official way.
Yeah.
To know each other. So that's what brings us today. So, but before I get to, the great divide and asking you how you see the great divide politically in America today, Tell the audience a little bit about your journey personally, from what took you from, beginning of life where you grew up in upstate New York, I believe, and then to take us on that journey.
Well, I was born in Rochester to a Liberian mother who was here working. She was going to get her master's degree and stuff like that. And so born here to a Liberian mother, we went back to Liberia for a while until 1983 when the coup happened. And we were able to come back to the States, moved over to Chicago, where I grew up for, a few years there. I lived with my dad again back in Rochester for 2 years. But then when I moved back to Chicago with my mom, we moved to a suburb called Evanston, Illinois, where Northwestern University is. A lot of people may or may not know.
I know it well. I spent 2 years in Chicago going to school out there.
Oh, so and actually the town that I grew up in, Jeremy Piven, that's where he grew up, and they had the Piven School, the theater school out there. And
oh, really?
So, yeah, John and Jane Cusack came out of there. We actually had Zach Guilford, who was on Friday Night Lights, came out there. I came out there, if you want to say. But Evanston was a very artistic town. It was a great place to grow up. It lost its way that it where it is now. It was still pro-American. We had a 4th of July parade that the football team marched in. I couldn't wait to be a senior to be able to march in that parade. It was a beautiful place to grow up. And then I got a full scholarship to play football at University of Iowa. I went over there, but that's when I would say the enemy, if you will, and all those the deceiving distractions really took hold, really became a stronghold in my life. I became an alcoholic. I fell for the biggest trap that men fall for, which is women. And so between alcohol, women, and then I had access because I played football, it was just too much that was coming in my way. And so that even cost me my scholarship at the end of my 4.5 years. But in that time, I found acting, and I found the only thing that I enjoyed doing, preparing for as much as the final result. Because even with football or wrestling or track or school, I hated the process. I was like, ugh, just get me to the end of the game or end of the day. Let me play the game. I'll figure it out then. And I fell in love with acting. And so I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out to LA and take a shot. Actually, I was saying this story the other day. It was between New York or LA. And I flew to New York that summer, hung out with an old friend of mine from college. And the reason I didn't choose New York, it was because New York never closed. And I still knew, I had an issue, but I was like, well, at least in LA, the bars close at 2 o'clock. You know what I mean?
That's true.
I was like, I have to go home. Whereas in New York, you can go to another one and another, another, another. Right. And so I'd go to LA in 2004, get jobs working in a restaurant game and doing all that kind of cliche actor stuff and still struggling with the same vices I had because, you know, you can change locations, but your issues still come with you. Right. And still kind of running around there, but trying to figure out life in the world. I get into the union in 2007, and that's when I started doing more union work, commercials mostly at the time. Still doing plays because doing plays, that was my home. And as time went on, about 2013 is when I tried my first stint at sobriety. And I did that. I was sober for about 19 months, then wow. fell off the wagon. And then by only God's grace was it only 5 months that I was out, because in those 5 months, everything came back like this. You know, I went from dating this girl that I thought I was going to marry, who, you know, I was hyper emotional about, like, we can be as actors and artists.
I mean, actors can be emotional. God, I never.
That's so crazy. That's so crazy.
That is crazy.
And so, you know, from there, you know, having paying for my first car in cash that I ever paid for in cash, living in a beautiful, went from a roach infested place in Koreatown to like a nice apartment in the valley. All these things were happening. And then I drank and like I had to move out of my apartment. The girl and I were breaking up. I was sleeping on a friend's air mattress in his sunroom that literally would like deflate by every morning. So I was wake up on the ground, like wow. on the ground. And you know, that by that point it got to 2016. In that time I was working for this company where I was doing presentations for Crest and Oral-B, and that the owners of it were this husband and wife who were Christian and Christian conservative. Huh. And so at the time, you know, outside of Iowa, but Iowa is still a liberal college. So, you know, you don't have those values right there. But from Evanston to Chicago to Iowa to LA, everything was only kind of presented to me on the left. And in college, it was really like, well, God's not real. And the Bible is put together by man and Constantine and Council Nicaea, and lie, you know, all these things that they kind of say over and over as a lie. And so I started working with these people. And a lot of the people that we would, you know, fly in from different parts of the country, it was really the first time that I was around open conservatives, Christian conservatives on a consistent basis. And I fell in love with them as people, and they loved me, and we're having that back and forth. So when I fell off the wagon for those 5 months, and we hit a point where I pretty much almost lost my job because I got drunk and, you know, did what alcoholics do, you were chaos and destruction. And these people didn't turn their back on me. In fact, I remember this time around, they always say something in program where after you go, it's like you can have a head full of AA and a stomach full of alcohol, and you won't enjoy it in the same way you did before. And this time around, I was able to hear when people said, we're only telling you this because we love you. Right. And I was like, and for some reason this time I could hear it, because before, when people were worried about me, it was more in my head. It was like, well, it was bad luck. It was bad luck, and wait till I make it, then you don't have to worry about me anymore. All these things, right? Needless to say, nevertheless, not realizing that I was actually, that was the barrier about me making it at any level, was the fact that that was happening.
Correct. But this
time, right? And but this time they actually said this, and I heard it. Hmm. And the, you know, so on March 15th, which is actually coming up tomorrow.
Yes.
March 15th of 2016, I walked back in the rooms of recovery, and my life changed. My life changed forever. The wife of the husband and wife group, every 15th of every month, pretty much, as she's done since 2016, she would always text me like, hey, you know, keep going. Congratulations. Every month, not even just on, as we say in program, our birthday year, right? But 2016, at the same time, I had kind of turned away from Democratic policies because I saw that Obama was just full of crap, and I didn't have enough interaction or enough faith in the Republican side, because of course we saw what George Bush did. And so I was like, okay, well, that 2016, that I get sober in March. By that September, my career is already back on track. And I was at the National Black Theater Festival. And the first night there was we're doing a play, The Dutchman by Amiri Baraka.
Oh, yeah.
Two-person play.
I knew Amiri Baraka and actually hung out when he had his Maoist organization in the Bronx and Newark, New Jersey when I definitely know all about him.
Yeah, I didn't know. I was still early in my like history of how things really work, so I didn't know how much he was a part of that communist movement until later.
Like a very unique, talented individual, and at the same time, obviously went down the Maoist path and the communist path.
Yeah,
but yeah, very talented individual.
So you know, I'm there on that first night in Winston-Salem, and that first night was the first Republican debate. Right. So that was like I would call it the famous Trump debate, where he just took out everybody. And
versus like, what was it? 15, 16 people,
something like that. Yeah. And Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, I forget the other names, but he was just knocking people out. And I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, well, at the very least, this is entertaining. And I was not, I was not a Trump fan at all. Like to me, I didn't like him. I thought he was bombastic. I thought he was like a rich white guy, you know, especially because how I was being taught in school and in the culture. But yet I'm watching this guy and I'm like, at the very least, somebody's going to shake this stuff up. And that's cool with me. Like, let's see what happens.
Huh. Interesting.
And he said something, one thing he said where I'm like, I'm going to vote for this guy, was they were talking about, you know, healthcare for all. You know, on the argument on the left is like, everyone deserves healthcare, and on the right usually it's like, it's just going to bankrupt us, we can't do it, no real solution, just a no. Right And Trump raises his hand, he goes I know how we can get past this. He goes, let's put it on the open market and let the market decide. And I was like, they're going to try to kill this guy. that was back in September of 2016. I knew that he was coming with such a solution for this argument that they couldn't have that. Like, we needed, because the argument is, it's like the sickness is what the healthcare system wants. They don't want you to be, you know, healthy, right? Correct. So they don't want us to actually come up with a solution for this. They want us to be arguing it, and they'll keep the kind of ball rolling. So, you know, I get excited about him. I'm sober now. I got my best friend and I were living, you know, close together. And I started meeting some other guys in LA who were of the similar mindset of conservatism, but going deeper than just being like that kind of the conservatism that I understood. It was more the true, if I started learning the true history of our country, I started learning about a lot of it was just the negative of what the other side was really bringing to us, like the death that they were promoting as life, which was, you know, as of now looking back, how insane it was. But also, you know, I ended up voting for him. And from 2016 all the way to 2020, in between that, I'm watching people who I worked with on set, who I've known for years in LA, become different people, like lose themselves to this, you know, Nazi or whoever they thought Trump was. And all the while, they could say things to me only because of my skin color. They had no idea that I was a Trump supporter. And even when I would start to talk to people and go, you know, well, you know, give them a different perspective on it, so another way to look, they would disregard it, or they would never once think that I actually supported Trump. They would just think I'm arguing for argument's sake, because inherently I couldn't support Trump because I'm a black guy, right?
Correct. Which
I'm watching this stuff happen and I'm thinking to myself, but you say they're racist? Like, I'm saying things to you, like covertly to a certain extent, but I'm saying it to you that would indicate, hey, maybe this guy believes this and supports this guy. And then I watched them say things about, you know, Trump supporters as a whole, which included these Christian conservatives, this Christian conservative husband and wife team that had been there for me on my bottom. And still to this day, they're here, you know, in my life, saying things about those people, saying things about my best friend who has been there for me in LA, why I crashed his car, why, you know, we've argued and fought, and when I've been his godfather to his sons. And they're saying these things, and it's just, it started getting me to a place of just being disheartened by the LA world and what it, like even the the social aspect of it, right? I wasn't drinking anymore, so I wasn't going out to any bars and clubs. So that was that. And I'm like, well, I don't really want to be around these people outside of being on set. But ironically enough, at the same time, my career is going like this. So I start working more and more. I'm on TVs. I remember at one point I had two different commercial campaigns going at the same time, one for Chase and one for Comcast. So in 2017, I booked this movie where I got to fly back to Liberia and shoot a movie about the history of our country. So all these things were happening. I'm sitting in the church that my grandfather was the main pastor of in Providence Church. And I look up and I see his name on a plaque on the board over here to my right. And that's like my big scene in the movie is that moment. Right. And I'm just like, life is just in my career. I'm like getting everything I ever wanted as an actor.
And that church was back in Liberia.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called Providence Church. Yeah. And the movie's called Providence Island. If anyone wants to go look it up, I think it's on Tubi now. Yeah. It's back when I had 6 or 8 pack abs. So not anymore. I'm a dad now. So I only got 2.
No. You got the dad bod.
Not completely. I'm working on it. I'm still doing my pull-ups, but everything was kind of was moving in that direction of everything I dreamed of. And by beginning of 2020, and this is according to a friend of mine, he's like, so what are you doing for work now? I was like, I'm just acting, bro. And he's like, yo, you've hit that 1% of all actors in LA, which is to be just a working actor. And I'm like,
absolutely.
You know, and my favorite day, just to share a quick acting story, was I had 5 auditions in one day. 2 of them were on tape. I put those on tape. And the third one was like a new audition, and the last 2 were callbacks. And I'm going through the day, not even thinking about it, prepared. I'm just boom, boom, knocking them out. And by the last one, it was for a scene in, it was for NCIS. And so I had to go into Paramount, right? And I go into Paramount and I'm just like, I got myself worked out in my head, you know, I'm off book and everything. And I get in there and I'm just, at this point now in my career, I just really just kind of relax. Like I don't even do anything. And I'm looking around and I see people doing the things that I used to do, right? They would come on and they get their script and they're holding it and they're just like, da-da-da-da-da. And some people walking around pacing and some people just kind of like still like frozen, like don't move, just wait till your turn. And I'm looking, I'm watching everyone. Wow. I remember I used to be there, but now I have this piece. Like it was such an amazing moment. And I was the last audition to go in that day too. And so I go in, the people are like, all like good, bright. And I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do this. Dude, boom, boom, knock it out. And I leave and it got to a point where like, I knew I booked the part, you know? And I'm just like, all right, cool. Time to go home. And that was the pinnacle to me of being an actor, was having all those auditions all day and in every single audition, just feeling comfortable to go out there and do the work that I practice and go show them what I had and be done. Not like, oh, I booked them all. Cause that wasn't the pinnacle. To me, the pinnacle was running around Los Angeles to all the different spots and going in there and doing my thing. That day was such a special day. So I booked that part. Then 2020 came around and I actually had a play that was supposed to open on the day they closed, they shut everything down, which was once again, March 15th.
So
coming leading up to it, this play I was doing, cause I was getting kind of tired of the audition process. I wanted just to do the part. They shut everything down. And early on in the COVID process, I was like, all right, you know, I've been checking out Epoch Times, talking about what's going on in China. And I'm like, but I'm trying to keep people's hopes up, send them awesome videos. And then, you know, 2 to 3 months in, it's like, something's off. Something is really off about this thing. And I'm like, if this is so deadly, how come the homeless population keeps growing at the corner of my street? I'm like, these guys are living out here and they're passed out on the corner drunk, but yet they're fine. But everyone else is scared of what's going on. Like, it just didn't add up to me. Right. And then, you know, of course, then people started pushing back about COVID. The election started happening. I get into a argument with my best friend about whether people are doing enough, whether conservatives and Republicans are doing enough to fight what's coming. I said they were. He said he was. I was at the time more of a Tim Pool guy. For him, he was more of an Alex Jones guy. So he's like, the world's coming to an end. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's cool. And so we go out to the first thing we ever did. We went to Long Beach. Next day he comes to me, he goes, let's go to Long Beach for this recall of Newsom. I was like, cool. So we went to Long Beach. We came with we had stacks of paper about Newsom's top 10 greatest hits or, you know, worst hits, depending on how you look at it. And we're handing that out and we were meeting with the lady who put it together. Yeah. And then we started the following week, we actually went to the Beverly Hills rally for the first time. And that was when it was probably 50 people, right? And then we end up start walking down Rodeo. We walk back up and people are like kind of laughing at us and pointing. And I just kind of lose it. And I'm like, you guys are sitting here, you know, laughing. I was like, a lot of them were Black folks. I was like, we're killing our babies like at this high number. We're doing this at this high number. We're losing, but y'all laughing over here, still supporting the same people. And I'm getting really riled up. But we get back to the park and I'll never forget this one beautiful lady, mother of five, Jewish lady that has a ring on that could pay for both of our lifestyles for a year, right? And I go up to her and she's holding the sign that says open the schools. And so I have my phone. I'm just like, oh, let me ask her a question. So I go up to her and go, hey, can you tell us why you're here? She was like, well, I'm here to support the school, you know, opening the schools because my kids will be fine. We have money. We can get tutors. It's for those poor kids, that those Black and brown kids the left say they care about, that will be falling behind. And as she's saying this, she's starting to tear up and is starting to cry. And I'm just like, whoa. I'm like, this is next level. So we just keep going to the Beverly Hills rallies. They keep getting bigger and bigger every Saturday. I have a big moment where I end up talking down a bunch of BLMers. You know, Antifa came and tried to intimidate and fight us at one point. The weekend before the election, we got up to 10,000 people in the park, shutting down streets. We're dancing in the streets.
I was there. We didn't know each other, but yeah, I was there.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
It became a every weekend hangout party. Everyone's
big time.
People started driving in from Sacramento and San Diego every weekend for that thing. And it felt like you knew the world was going to be different.
It felt like a mini Woodstock. A little thing. It was weird. It was it was the 60s, but it was, you know, 2020. Yeah, it was weird. Yeah.
And it was ultimately once we got past this one moment where Antifa tried to start a bunch of trouble and they got kicked out by the cops. From then on, it felt like a festival. People started setting up food, giving out free hot dogs and popcorn, and people setting up their you know, t-shirt business and people bands playing. It was just so beautiful, bro.
There's so much to unpack with this journey, and I want to kind of take you back and answer a bunch of questions. I mean, you laid out so much, but you know, I want to kind of, because there's a little story that I had that kind of fits into the Great Divide part, because I was there when probably at that day with the Antifa, and there was this young, I guess he got separated from his crowd, young Antifa kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was in his 20s or whatever, and he was kind of surrounded by all the conservative MAGA people and everything. And everybody's really coming at him hard. And so I grab him and I start talking to him and I pull him aside and I say, you know, I want to talk to you, man. I said, you know, when I was your age, I was you. And I started sharing with him how I was a radical and I was trying to overthrow the US government and I was a communist. And he's blown away for me telling them the story. And I just thought, you know, talking to him and I said, look, you know, I'm not here to tell you what to think or how to think, but I'm telling you, you need to think. You need to start listening to other points of view. I'm going to treat you with respect. You got to learn how to treat other people who disagree with you with respect. And maybe, just maybe, you might change your ideas later as you grow up, or maybe you won't. But if you come at it with it. So we had this incredible conversation. At the end, this young Antifa kid goes, man, I just want to thank you so much for being respectful to me and sharing that and just treating me so well. He said, you just, you know, I was like, you know, I said, I was human. I understand. But that's how we need to talk to each other, disagree or don't disagree. We're both humans and you got a different perspective. But I'm telling you, it's not the only perspective. And you just may be wrong. You just may be way wrong, because I was way wrong, you know. And if I can change, well, maybe you'll change. Maybe you won't. But at least treat people on my side with respect like I'm treating you with respect.
Right.
And maybe I planted a seed in that kid or not. But I think that's what the, you know, how do we cross this great divide between us. Because you share it, and you shared your story, the journey you went on, you know, going from dealing with alcohol, but also politically, you know, coming from being not a conservative, you know, parents from Black area, you should not be where you are. I mean, you know, if you just the way the left judges you, how could you be on this side? Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Been on that journey, and you started to think, and you started to question, and you started to pay attention, and you came up with different conclusions. So well, share a little, you know, that's for me. How do you see that divide we're living in today, given your unique perspective? Because you have a unique journey you went on.
Well, one of the biggest things I think about the divide, and I go to what the cult, remember I said about what the culture had taught me, when 2020 hit and they started doing, you know, when people were getting back to life and work and stuff later in the year, they started with the masks mandate and all that stuff. And what really got me was, I was going to the rooms of recovery, but then it began to ostracize those that wouldn't follow those rules. And I remember thinking to myself, wait a minute, I remember what it took to get me into the room. And it was any excuse would have been like, well, I knew it wasn't the right place, I'm out. But I remember where I really was. And it's like, you need that place, because if you don't, the next stop is the morgue, like the next stop or jail. Right. And so this is a place where it was like the last, they always say called the last house on the block. And now they're sitting there giving parameters to come in when it says the only need to be in AA is a desire to stop drinking, not your vaccine card and your mask. Right. And so it turned me off about going in there, but what it actually turned me on to, because I went to this men's retreat before for AA, and I saw this documentary on Bill W, and I found out, you know, he's a Catholic. And that the original manuscript had like God, more like references to God all over the place. And if anyone knows, from the Serenity Prayer to, you know, all the different prayers that we actually that we say in a program, whether you're an atheist, a Christian, a Jew, a Muslim, whatever, you're praying to the one God. And that's what I started to strive for, or to really want, is to go, where is this truth that saved my life? I know it saved my life. But I see the organization of it is not something that is attractive to me in that way anymore. But I know that this thing saved my life. Where is that? So then I started digging in, and when we were at the Beverly Hills rallies, like a lot of these pastors would be around on fire, man. They were just like going. I'm like, wait a minute, this is Christianity? And so I started digging more and more and getting closer and closer to it. So I think when you get the question of where is the divide, I honestly think it's God's people or godless people, to tell you the truth. And a lot of these godless, just like I was, just like I think that kid you described, it is a lot of it was we were led astray, you know, not saying it was initially our fault, but then we held on to it because we're holding on to our pride, especially when you're at any age, but especially when you're young and you want to show, I have my own statement, I know what I'm saying is true. So I think the great divide really comes down to the man's pride, and like either you're following God or you're not. Or, you know, and so I think that's where it really lies. And the longer that I've been on this path and on this journey, the clearer that it's starting to come into sight, where it's like, where are we basically off on? Well, I mean, to want to kill babies in the womb, to want to chop up kids because they say they're a different gender, to, you know, right now screaming about funding more wars, to tax people into oblivion. It's like, man, this is one side is actually just pro death, and but God is life. So to me, that's kind of the biggest divide. And I'm not saying that, you know, some people who are Democrats can't start to shift that thing back. I think it's really hard, because so much of what's been promoted has been anti-life, but wrapped up in like freedom, which is weird. And so I think that's kind of where the big divide is. It's like either you're for God or you're not. And that's why we see this revival happening right now in this country.
Well, you know, like you say, the way we've been divided, when people are divided, they don't know each other, and they're kind of set up, you know, by the media, by politics, by all these forces, to not get to know each other. Right. And so, to give an example, that couple who were there for you, to the people who live in that particular side of the equation, the left side of the equation, their bubble, they don't know people like that. Mm-hmm. And they have all kinds of beliefs and assumptions about those, that couple who help you and change your life. And if they got to know them personally, they would know them as great people like you did. And, and they were people who were there for you. And then how do you hate somebody who's great people doing good things, helping change people's lives? Why would you hate them? Yeah. But, you know, the only way you can hate them is to not know them. Yeah. And that's the way you're kept aside, you know, and that's, you know, I know you're about to jump and then I want to jump one more thing, but I see that excitement. Go ahead, man.
It's funny because like now things I've seen is that the left has been projecting everything. And they always would say, well, people hate what they don't understand. And that just hit me right now. As you said that, I'm like, wait a second. That's what I was taught my entire life growing up in Evanston, Chicago, Iowa, and then LA was like, well, you know, the other side just hates what they don't understand. And now we've gone full circle where really, I don't even know if it's the full circle, but, or that's what's been the message while we've been taught to hate them. And until I was around consistently, I really didn't understand or know them. And I may have been around others. They just weren't vocal about it. So I didn't know that's who they were. Right. So that just hit me as like, whoa, wait a minute. We were taught like, oh, the other side just hates what they don't understand. And I'm like, I live through them not understanding the right.
It's like they need the mirror in front of them when they say that, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, you know, I had a great opportunity that kind of taught me that real hard. How do people change beliefs? How do people change what they believe in? And years ago, I did I line produced some training videos for the U.S. Marine Corps, we took educators and guidance counselors to a mini boot camp at Camp Pendleton. And we interviewed one guidance counselor out of Newark, New Jersey, who when we interviewed him, he told us, I hate the military. They're baby killers. I will never tell my students to join the military. I mean, he was just so, you know, extreme left on his point of view about the military. But, you know, it was a week to go to, you know, Camp Pendleton and have a vacation from a inner city school. So he goes and he's there and he meets all these young Marines and he sees them graduate. And when they're graduating, we got cameras on all the people we brought, the teachers and educators, and he's crying like a baby. He's crying. And we approach him and we're like, you know, can we interview you? What's going on, man? You seem very emotional. And he said, I can't tell you how wrong I've been all my life. These are the best people I've ever met in my life. He said, I'm going to go back to my school and I'm going to encourage all my students to join the military. And he's like inner city kids. And I was like, oh man, you could argue with this dude for 50 years and not change one thing, but he had a close experience. And to his credit, he realized what he thought because he never knew anybody in the military. All of a sudden he realized everything he believed was bullshit. It was just BS.
Yeah. And that's why I believe, and I kind of always do this, is just I love traveling, going to the airport or train station because I love talking to anybody. I love like if it, you know, comes up. And that's probably the only thing I miss about going to the bars, just sit next to a random stranger and you just start talking and you find out the most crazy stuff, right? And I believe that one of the issues we face with our cell phones, as much as the information that they give us, they also isolate us. So to give us 100%. An opportunity not to talk to each other. And if we can get to a place where we get back to communicating with each other in real time, I think it will change. It will change our world for the better. You know, flip everything on its head. And there's a song by this guy. It's called Butterfly by oh my goodness, I forget. Why can't I was gonna say James McAbee, but no, it's his name escapes me. But his line says, "They want you to stare into the screen and see yourself. Blow smoke into their mirror till you're mentally unwell." And I'm like, dang, you know, and he's sitting there talking about like watching CNN, but being on your phone and being on the screens and saying like, you aren't better than that. His whole thing is like, you're a butterfly. You can, you know, become who you're supposed to be. And it's really wild because that's what you saw people start to do is take on this idea, whether it's the idea of the other is what CNN, what MSNBC says about the other, instead of, again, experience them from the self. So, I mean, that's one of the things that I can say to anyone watching is like, even if you're on the right to the left, go and engage, go and have a conversation if you can, of course, because, I mean, it seems like our world is really fractured and it's hard to find people outside your bubble because if you don't live in LA, it's going to be kind of hard to find a far leftist a lot of times, but Yeah, no, it's like James Arthur. That's his name, James Arthur. Yeah, so check out James Arthur, Butterfly, everyone. It's a really awesome song. But
very cool. But you know, but you're right. It's like, and maybe it's unique for me because I have been on all the sides politically in my life. But you know, when I was on the left, as opposed to where I am now on the right, is I come at it, I can talk to anybody. Like I talked to that Antifa kid. There's nobody I'm afraid to talk to about anything. And I'm going to listen to them. I'm going to be respectful to them. And if I disagree, I'll disagree in a respectful way with them. But I'm not afraid. I mean, I'm not afraid of their ideas. I'm not afraid of what they're going to say. None of that bothers me. I'm like, well, you know, at the end of the day, if they believe what they believe, that's it. I can't control that. You know, I can only control what I believe. But the other side on the left is scared to have that conversation with someone on our side now because they're afraid, or they put us in such a who we are, which when none of the things that they believe about us, you know. And so they got this boogeyman. We're the boogeyman under the bed, right? And they're afraid to look under the bed, and there ain't no boogeyman under that damn bed, you know. And that's the problem.
Well, I mean, that's, again, let's go back to the crux of the divide, which is God or godless, you know.
Yeah.
As it says 365 times in the Bible, be not afraid. So
be not afraid.
Our nature as humans is to be scared, and the devil lies to us to scare us. And those things that are told about those on the right that I used to believe were lies. So they were of the devil. And that fearlessness comes from, being a child of God, being a follower of Christ. And I think that that's the boldness that comes in. That's the boldness. Like, I give you this, that the night before I realized this is what I was going to do, and I was going to be completely bold and loud about it and not be afraid of it, kind of like putting myself out there in social media incognito. The night before, I was walking down the street with my dog. It was Friday night and in North Hollywood. And I'm feeling this kind of push and this pull to like do more. And I look up and it's a full moon. As soon as I look at the moon, I just feel this warmth in my whole body. And it was like, do this. And all I could say was, yes. I was like, yep, this is what I got to do. The next day, my buddy and I are driving over to the Beverly Hills rally. And he goes, hey, man, I want to show you this. And he puts on Dale Bectree and Alex Jones. And they're talking about, how do you have the energy to do this? Like, how do you keep going? How do you keep going? And the other guy's like, they both go, man, you know, when people ask me that, he goes, man, it's the Holy Spirit, baby. Like the energy of the Holy Spirit just moves me. And I stopped the video and I turned to him. I go, why did you show me this? He goes, I don't know. I felt like this would be good for you to check out. And I'm like, this happened to me last night, bro. And so we get to the rally. And when we get there, there was like five of these BLM kids who were like, you know, facing off against some MAGA supporters. And they were just like, you know, the kind of, and I always like to say, it's like the old black cliche where they go up to a white guy and they'd be like, white boy this, white boy that, this is in your country. And then I'm seeing my friends and one of them was like a friend of mine that I worked with before, who's hesitating because we've also been kind of conditioned, if like waterboarded into being afraid to push back against what the atrocities that happened to black people, right? And I'm watching this thing and I walk in and his last line was like, this ain't your country. We should da 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 da. And I go, well, whose country is it? And I just went off. But I went off in a way that like I wasn't just screaming back and forth. I finished up with stats about like all the kids being murdered in Chicago at this point, just all in the month of July. And where were they then? And they end up just turning around and walking away.
Wow.
And it was like that boldness came from the Lord, where I wasn't afraid of any of that. I wasn't afraid at all that they were going to do this, do that, or whatever. To me, it was that Ephesians 6, you know, you speak like an ambassador with an ambassador in chains where you ought to speak. And it's like, that was the sword of the Spirit coming out of me, even though I didn't like have knowledge of the Bible to that point yet. It was these things are because God works through man, right? And so these things were happening where they were defeated, not because I beat them down with my hands and we jumped them or anything, but because the truth of what was going on, they turned away and left. So that I would implore everyone to go like check out the Bible, check out Jesus Christ, like get close to that, because your fears will become less and less the more you get to know him and you start to understand, like Ephesians 6:10 says, for we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers of his dark age. So that's why I think you and I don't fear, because we're not going up against a man when we talk to him, that person across from us. We're actually going across from the, we're trying to get the ideas of the enemy and destroy that. And we have the power of Christ right behind us and in front of us, where I think they look at you and they're going, John Duffy, you know, white guy who's tall and built. He must be bad. Like, they're seeing the man first. That's the difference. That's what they don't understand about our support of Trump. They think we support him like it's our God. It's like, no. Trump's not nowhere near a God to us. It's because they don't have God, and they ultimately look for a man to worship, whether it's Obama or, you know, Biden or whoever.
Well, you know, if your religion is politics, which it is for too many of them, and, you know, like, and I always distinguish between the different versions, because you got communists, socialists, progressives, liberals, Democrats. They're not all the same. But, you know, the ones who are atheists, and I know when I was a communist and an atheist, the Communist Party was God. The party and the leader of the party, in our case, it was Mao Zedong. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, this is my book, Mao Zedong's quotes from when I was 16 years old. I still have the same book. In the South Bronx, this is my book. Yeah, I used to go by. This was my Bible back then, right? And, you know, we believe that Mao was God, in essence, you know? And so you're right. When you believe your leaders, your party, your political thing is the place you go for everything, then that's all you got. You got nothing else. And that's nothing to really have, because that's an emptiness, because that's not where it is, you know? So you're right about that. I mean, I'm blessed. I know this one pastor, a dear friend, Pastor Rudy Gonzalez, he rescues children. He has an organization rescuing children from sex traffickers, but he's done all things over all around the world. And he was in Indonesia at one point. And he got him and some of the other pastors got captured by an Al-Qaeda type group. And they basically told him, all you got to do is denounce Jesus and you can walk away. And he said, well, I guess you're going to kill me. He said, because I ain't doing it. And this is who this guy, he was in the military. He's just an amazing human being. And basically, they could not understand someone like him. And he said, so let's get it on. Go ahead. Yeah. And they just walked away and they just left them.
Wow.
Because they could not cope with somebody willing to die for their belief. They couldn't see that in him. And so when he did it, and the other pastors were like, why did you do that? He said, because I'm not going to just do it just to let them say I denounced them. No, I'm not going to do it. So he was a unique and powerful individual, and he does great work, him and his family, you know, God's work, and also rescuing children from sex trafficking. But that's the belief you have when you have that power.
Right.
And he's, to me, he's probably one of the most powerful people I've met in my lifetime, and I've met a lot. But yeah, you know, we're going to have a hard time getting to the end of this, man, because
that's okay. We'll come back. I can always come back.
We got so much to talk about, and
we can always do a part two, brother.
We're going to have to do a part two. Yeah. There's no doubt about it, because your story, there's so much to your story, and I'm glad you shared so much of it already. But there's so much I want to take you to. Let's pivot, if you don't mind, for a moment, and let's talk about the industry, Hollywood, what Hollywood is, what we do, because it's a big part of both of our activities in life. You know, that's what we participate in so much. How do you see it? How do you, you know, like you said, you wanted to create content for the culture. Share your take on Hollywood, where we are today, the alternatives that are coming about, whatever your take on it. And let's have a little Hollywood discussion for a moment.
Well, you know, I see that Hollywood is going through a much needed change. I think just like the Democratic Party or this kind of liberal culture that we've been living in for at least the last 70 years, since at least the early 70s. It's time for the change. I actually enjoy the fact that the kind of isolation of power or the centralization of power in either New York or LA has shown to become a problem. And we need to tell more American stories and more stories about, you know, all over. And I think that we've seen a spread where people are moving to Tennessee, where I am. I know Texas is doing much more work. Wyoming's doing more work, whether it's, not Homestead, but, the Kevin Costner show, which I haven't watched yet.
I know what you're saying. I just blanked on it.
Anyway, I'll remember it as we're talking. But
Taylor Sheridan's
Taylor Sheridan's show, right. But I do think it's a good thing. I think that and what I've been trying to do, you know, I've worked with PragerU. I've connected with people from Turning Point. Now I'm working with Daily Wire. I do believe that conservative minded individuals, churches, you get your money together and invest in the arts, because there's something that hit me a couple years ago as I've started getting more and more into the Bible. I'm like, wait a minute. As Christians, we have, who was the greatest storyteller of all time? It was the Lord. So why are we not using that medium in order to share our message to get that across? Like, a lot of times they go over just to, and again, I love what like people like Charlie Kirk have done, or Ben Shapiro, but they're just very statistically oriented. That tells you the truth, but it doesn't capture the heart. The left did a great job of capturing the heart so they can tell you lies, but at least they had your heart, you were going to believe them. So I think that we have a huge opportunity here with the decentralization of Hollywood's power. And sadly for them, they have been ideologically driven and not, you know, story or faith driven, that their product has now start to show the cracks that their belief system always had. It's why so many people, you know, would drink themselves crazy or do a lot of drugs, like Holly Woke, exactly, is because they were holding on by dear life to, you know, Matthew Perry. I met him a couple times, and God rest his soul, but he was struggling with drugs and alcohol his entire life, literally until he died. And he had everything that, you know, any man or especially any actor could want. But as I said in the Bible, what good does it do a man to have the world if he loses his soul? And that man was holding on with both hands. He wasn't letting God take the lead. So if we can, and for them now, they've seen they're falling apart. You can barely make anything in LA just because they've taxed people out of oblivion. So I do believe we're at a good place. And I implore investors to really go look out for these stories. The return on investment is basically the guy who plants the tree that they'll never stand under the shade of. That's where we are at right now. And that's how the other side has had hold on my heart, and at one point your heart, and so much of the culture, is because they don't see the return on investment tomorrow. It's like, no, the return on investment is the fact that a whole generation are going to move in a way where we have more families, where we have more Christian men and women, and where we actually love our country deeply, that we're not going to, you know, be okay with things like open border, killing our babies, or just divorce because I don't like you anymore. You know, I do think that change is coming, and it's already here. There's a couple projects out, and you know, it's an exciting time, and so we can tell more stories.
Well, I just saw, and then I want to go back to what you just said with Daily Wire. I just saw a little bit of a conversation with the guy, and I can't remember his name, who was in the latest Marvel movie. African-American dude. I can't remember the name.
Oh, Anthony Mackie?
Yes, Anthony Mackie. Yeah. But he was just commenting on the importance of masculinity and being a man for your family, being a man, doing the right thing as a man in society, and not being afraid to do that. And you know, teach your kids right, to raise them correct, give them the right values. And, you know, he's already getting criticized and potentially canceled because they don't want to hear that message from someone like him. That's not the message of the left. You know what I mean? But, you know,
that's not what they were paying him for.
No, they were not. If anything, they were hoping for the opposite.
Right? Well, I think it only happened because Captain America bombed. So now he's like, screw it. I can just go now.
But, you know, his message is dead on. Watching. But like, you know, you said with Daily Wire, I mean, they have done a couple of documentaries. One of the ones that I thought was excellent and did at the box office, I think third highest, Am I a Racist by Matt Walsh.
Great, really powerful thing.
Right. Yep. And just takes it on and in the form of a documentary, of course, but entertaining and questioning and making you think. And he also did the one before, What is a Woman? Another excellent documentary as well. Yep. But that's like you're saying, that's some of the content. There's more coming from other organizations as well that are alternatives to Hollywood. I've seen in the last couple of months, I've probably seen more great films, and none of them are from Hollywood. I've seen none of the movies that were for the Oscars.
I've
seen all the projects that are non-Hollywood.
You and everybody else. I was like, what movie is this? Who did what?
Well, I think, you know, it's like their documentary had like 10,000 viewers. That was really, you know, big. I guess that was a winner, you know? but they're not reaching people and they're just talking to themselves and they're awarding themselves for talking to themselves, you know, and it's like, yeah, I guess that's your participation trophy. Yeah. You talk to yourself. Good. You know, but there's a lot, you know, coming out. The alternatives is what I think is where it's growing. And that's where we have a chance to contribute to that, to reach the flyover country, to reach America, the people who want entertainment, but not the stuff that Hollywood has been promoting for the last too long.
Well, and I think that it's, and I love, again, I love movies happening. I'm not trying to take down anybody for putting out movies.
Sure.
I want us now to start to shift into weekly series. And I know it's not the cheapest thing, but I saw what happened. I did with the Babylon Bee. I did California's Move to Texas. And it was a funny little sketch in it, but we did 6 episodes. And at the time, that was the best performing series of sketches that they had. Last year when I was at American Fest, at this point, it was 2 years after that happened. I'm walking around and people are running up to me and they're like, you know, oh my God, are you Steve Siaki? And they're like, let me take a picture with you. Can you sign and sign that? And even more importantly, the age group were between 15 and 25 to 28 years old. So that was a 6 episodes of 5.5 minutes or so each that captured people so hard that 2 years later, more people were coming up to me than there were the year before, closer to when it came out. So it tells me, much like Friends when it came out, much like Married with Children or All in the Family, or you name the sitcom Roseanne, if we can get into your home consistently with our message from a story element, people start to relate to character. As much as they love Matt Walsh or Charlie Kirk, no one goes, I'm a Matt Walsh or I'm a Charlie Kirk. People are like, yeah, I'm like an Al Bundy, you know, or I'm like a Ross or Rachel, or, you know, from Friends. People connect with character so much more that we need to start to build these weekly shows that will come into your home and people can sit down like fathers knows best. There's a reason why I was. So people can sit down together. The daughter can be like, I'm like that daughter over there. And I'm like, the father's like, huh, that's what we do. And it's like people are seeing the way to be. And that's where I think the arts is very, very needed to become, so that we can start to get the message consistent. Because movies only have at the most maybe a 4-month shelf life, to usually 2 to 2.5 months to 3 months, and then they're gone. Then it's it. They're done. The message and what they can do has already happened. Where if you have a weekly series, you have 6 to 16 to some old school 22 episodes to be in people's homes for 6 to 8 months. And then you're coming back and they're seeing what you're on your new adventure now, the following year. So for year after year, you know, Roseanne was on 10 years. So that's 10 years of relating to Roseanne and the strong woman and Dan, the clumsy dad, and the kids who are. So then people start to go, I'm like Darlene. I'm like this. I'm like that. I'm like the aunt who's just sleeping around. So I think we really need to pick up the scripted sitcoms and the scripted, you know, network show type of ideas, because it gets into the culture and grabs the heart even more.
I like that. I mean, obviously I'm a feature film guy. That's the world I work in, but I think you're raising some great points and now you got me thinking about it more, but I think you're dead on with that. You're right. Because, you know, that shelf life is long. I mean, you know, one of the TV shows I watched for years is Blue Bloods, which is just a great family and a great, you see that. And it's different than a feature because it's always there and the character's always. So, yeah, your point is dead on, man. Definitely true. Definitely true.
Thank you, sir.
The other thing, we don't have much time, but I want to get in a couple of things and then we're going to definitely come in back because, you know, there's so much I want to go even further with you. But I'd like to talk a little bit about Hollywood for Freedom, your podcast with that, and then anything else that you want to kind of close up with. And then we'll come back to all the political stuff, Musk, Doge, all that other stuff that I wanted to talk to you about, and so much more. But, you know, I'd like to get into where people reach you, Hollywood for Freedom, and anything else you're doing to, you know, get that out there.
So yeah, Hollywood for Freedom was something me and a group of artists started in the industry because of the COVID restrictions. And so we're sick of what we were seeing. And so if you go to Hollywood4freedom.com, we started a database for like-minded individuals. We're actually doing a podcast, as you see here, it airs 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern every Monday. That's Tim Glover, Tatum Shank, and myself. And we were just sick and tired of being told how we're going to do this stuff and how we're going to move. So we also knew that when people were getting pushed to the side, if you're looking to do a TV series, if you're looking to do a movie and you want freedom loving, not everyone's Christian in our group, or majority of people in our group is Christian, but not everyone in our database Christian is fine, but they are America first and they are American focused, where it's free speech and choice. So if you're looking for a grip, if you're looking for a stunt, if you're looking for actor, if you're looking for director, if you're looking for sound, you're looking for band, you're looking for an artist, you know, a painter, we have that list and we wanted to build that up. And we built from Hollywood first, because I do believe that maybe outside of New York, but the skill level it is to make the projects that are made in Hollywood is still at a high level. And so now imagine if you get the high level skill set without the wokeness, and you can fly them out to Tennessee to shoot a project, fly them to Wyoming to do a project. So now you take the high level of individuals who have been in the industry 15, 20 years, or even a little less, and you come with that skill, but without all the baggage. That's what we wanted to do at Hollywood for Freedom. So check us out, Hollywood4freedom.com. He mentioned that I was doing something on J6. So go check out my fundraiser, because it's legal fees. Go to defendsiaka.com and we can get into that more next time around. Yeah, I was arrested 3 years later for smiling and standing in that doorway for 71 seconds. So, but all my charges were dropped.
Wow, so. What a scary smile you must have, man.
Can't you tell? You can see it, right? This is why the state of California had to come after me. So there it is.
Oh my, yeah, that's a topic we definitely.
We'll get into
obviously
that.
Obviously been pardoned, and so that's.
Charges dropped. Yeah, so it was dropped. So I didn't even have to. But they harassed me for 3 years, raided my house. They still have my stuff, and they still have me running through the legal hoops I had to, because the punishment was the process. So we're here now, and thank God for Trump, and thank God for God.
Unbelievable. Anything you want to close on? And like I said, we'll come back and we'll definitely do another one. But, you know, there's so much inside the film industry. You know, look forward to working with you on stuff in the future.
Yes.
And this is, you know, I think we at least started the process. This is a good way to start the show off. And
yeah,
I'm feeling that you. I'm not going to be doing it monthly. I'm going to have to do a lot more.
you already know.
your story already know. About walking down the street and seeing the moon up there. I think I got the moon just came above me right now.
You're like, that Holy Spirit got you. Well, yeah. last thing I'll say, guys, is whether you know it or you don't, or you're intimidated by it, get into the Bible. Check out the New Testament, what Jesus was talking about, and go out. I'm sure you know somebody around here who a guy like, whether it's John, myself, or whoever else that you know speaks about Christ, and ask questions. You know, the things that you're feeling, the fear that you have, that weight that you feel on your back, it can be relieved, and you don't have to do it by yourself. So get in the Bible. Find out why this country is the greatest country ever, and it's because of our Christian foundation. And be bold and fearless, and God bless all.
Hey, I love it, man. I always say God didn't give me a lot of money, but he blessed me with a lot of great people, and you're one of the great people that he gave in my life. So, and that's worth a lot more than money, man. So, that's it.
And bring back God. Bring back God.
Right on, brother.
He didn't go anywhere. You bring him back in your heart. That's all. He didn't go anywhere.
Right on. Hey, thank you so much. Thank you for being the first guest on my show, man. I'm honored and blessed that we had a chance to connect up in Phoenix, and I look forward to connecting down in Nashville with you in the future.
Yes, and thank you for having me.
You got it, man. So until we come back for the second episode of our conversation, which we will, I wish you the best, and thanks again, man. God bless you.
You too, brother. God bless. Bye, guys.
Take care.
Take care.
So I hope you enjoyed the show with Siaka, and it inspired you to be courageous and live your passion and pursue your dreams. And, you know, like he said, you know, his ending summed it up all well. So join me every month, or probably sooner now, because like he said, I saw the light above me. So if I decide to take on more shows, you can join me on Sunday at 6 p.m. as we go on this new podcast adventure and conversation, From the Left to the Right, and How to Communicate Across the Great Divide. Encourage you to live courageously, make your life a masterpiece, and God bless until we meet next month or sooner.